Welcome to the Famous Monsters Podcast. We're here to talk horror, sci-fi, and fantasy. We are the Rocketeers, two roommates who haven't lived together in over 10 years. I'm Matt.
I'm Aaron. We are guest hosting for the Famous Monsters Podcast. We have our own podcast, the Launchpad Pod, and we're just filling in for George and the gang, but we're just really honored to be doing this, and we're just having a blast kind of taking the reins for a little bit. And we've done a Friday the 13th episode. We've done a Walking Dead George Romero episode. And today, Rumi, what are we doing today?
Happy Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, we are very honored and we're having a blast guest hosting the Famous Monsters Podcast. But I mean, the topics that we're getting to cover are so fun. They're so awesome and near and dear to our heart. I got to say, I like Christmas. I like Thanksgiving. But I love me some Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Halloween is the best time of year for people who are into horror, people who are into sci-fi. It is the time to celebrate all that creepy, spooky stuff.
Also free candy. It's also, that's like one of my favorite part about Halloween is like there's pretty much like one seminal rule about strangers, and it's don't take candy from strangers, except if you are not in your normal clothes and you have a bag that they put it in, if you take it from them at their own door, any kids are fine to take candy from strangers. I love it.
All right. Well, since we're talking about Halloween today, I think we got to start at the beginning.
Halloween one.
So John Carpenter said, I want to make a movie. No, let's go back even further. Let's go back way further. We'll get to the movies. Don't worry. We'll get to the movies. But let's go back way back, like DeLorean way back.
The 80s?
No, the 50s.
We are going way back. This is like ancient Celtic stuff here.
Yep.
Back in the day.
Not the Larry Bird Celtics.
that green basketball team. Like any nerds know what basketball teams are. Halloween as we know it has been around for a while, but its roots are really kind of mashed way, way back in different countries, different religions, and it kind of became this amalgamation of different traditions and different religions, essentially. Way back in like ancient Celtic times, and this is like before the 8th century, there was a festival called Samhain, which is written Samhain, but pronounced Samhain, and we'll get into that a little bit later. A lot of people who, Celtic people who went to these festivals, they would wear costume to ward off ghosts. And we're going to see that again throughout the history of Halloween.
Because ghosts are like Jason Voorhees. If you dress up to confuse them, they're easily confused.
Yeah, ghosts are like, wait, go, oh, wait, you're creepy too?
Okay. Later. Cool. Wait. Are you my mom?
Are you Steve?
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 Is that you?
No. All right, man. Later. I won't haunt you. In 8th century, the Celtic 8th century, around the 8th century, the new year, their calendar was based around November 1st being the first day of the new year.
Happy New Year.
Well, actually, it was Happy All Saints Day. That's what we called All Saints Day. It was a day to celebrate all the martyrs and saints, everybody who had done something amazing. It was All Saints Day. Another word for saints?
Another word for saints is hallow.
That's right. So the evening before All Saints Day became All Hallows Eve. And on that day and night, so October 31st, November 1st, the people believe that the lines between the living world and the dead world kind of got blurred and overlapped, and that ghosts were able to come out. And now it's interesting, and this is cool when you start to look at history like this, because back in the day, ghosts were not necessarily always scary. In this case, the spirits being closer to the living world, the Celtic people thought it helped them make predictions and prophecies about the future.
Huh. Did it work?
Ooh, you tell me.
Give me some winning lotto numbers.
Well, I'm sure the people didn't realize it was going to become Halloween. Eventually, Romans conquered the Celts, and a lot of the Roman traditions and religions started to overlap and combine with the Celtic ones, including Samhain or Samhain. The Romans also had their own ceremonies that commemorated the dead, as well as different gods and goddesses. They had different parts of their celebrations, including, for example, there was one goddess who was the goddess of fruits and trees.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, their traditions honoring her eventually became
Oh, is that like apple bobbing and
stuff? Exactly. So stuff like that. It just through the years, it just evolved and changed and kind of, you know, took pieces from one myth or one legend and kind of combined them with another.
It really is like a total mixture. It's like, oh, hey, what day are you guys having that party on? Oh, cool, cool, cool. We'll just borrow that for a little bit. Cool, yeah, cool. We
sounds like
that.
Like a good idea.
Oh, you guys like dunk your head in buckets to get apples? Sweet, sweet, sweet. We're gonna do that too now. So everybody, yeah. We can all celebrate together. Keep this party going.
Everyone can apple bob.
Yeah.
A lot of these All Hallows Eve, and then eventually as that holiday kind of evolved, a lot of those rituals and games and stuff started to be very centered around love, marriage, and finding husbands.
Ooh, it's like, sexy.
You know, there's one thing those women's like. It's Halloween games to find a husband. They would do stuff like burn chestnuts in a fire with names written on them. And I've read conflicting myths where whichever chestnut burned first all the way to ash without popping, that was your husband or would be your husband.
Wait, chestnuts? This sounds like a Christmas thing.
Don't talk to me. Talk to the Romans and the Celtics.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Trying to find your love. Little children
tied up by a fire.
Why are they tied up? What Halloween do you celebrate?
We'll stop singing now.
No, I was going to keep going. Anyway, women looking for love, trying to do all these different things. Another game that they would play was to literally hide a ring in food, like mashed potatoes or something that was served to like a group of people. And whatever freaking idiot was eating the mashed potatoes that had a ring in it, you ended up, like, it wasn't, you weren't married then, but like that was, it, I guess it was almost like when you go to a wedding and you throw your freaking, well, the girls throw their underwear and like that shows what idiot they're
going to
marry.
What weddings are you going to?
Sexy ones. So you know
bouquet?
A little bit about like my family's wedding traditions and Rumi's family's Halloween traditions. Whose family do you want to be part of?
So wait. Choking hazards was part of like finding your
yes,
love?
Yes, yes, yes. Certainly in my relationship. Yeah. So whatever guy was eating the mashed potatoes, he chomped on a ring. Who put this in here? Me, and I love you now. Which is interesting because that's one of the things that, you know,
wait,
we still have games like apple bobbing. But
it sounds like Christmas. Now it sounds like Valentine's Day. When are we getting into
Halloween
like-
eventually figures out where it wants to go as basically it ends up dropping off the religions and some of the more superstitious aspects of it. Because what happens is throughout the years, more and more religions kind of add their, like you said, add and take away little pieces of it. And it becomes a religious, you know, a religious thing. Then around the turn of the century, Halloween here in the U.S. starts to become more about community and neighborhood parties. Mm-hmm. So it's not just religious stuff anymore. It's kind of like getting together with people that you know and you love.
Block party.
Yeah, old school style. At that point, they started to censor it and get rid of the scary stuff, get rid of the superstition stuff.
Boo.
Because of that, it lost a lot of its religious meaning. In the 20s or so, that's when a lot of the traditions that you and I, as Americans, are familiar with Halloween, that's when some of those kind of started to become prevalent.
Well, and some of the things that I noticed is a lot of these block parties became like kid-centered. They'd have like little carnivals and, you know, the games like bobbing for apples.
Yep, yep.
And a lot of it became centered around like food and candy. And I think this is around the time when they're like, oh, wow, we can sell crap to kids around this time.
Sure.
And have a fun party.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of like Halloween started becoming what we know it as. When you can sell a cheap mask to a kid and tell them to go get candy, that's where it really takes off.
Just don't go to the McLean house. You're going to get tied up and put by a fire. Did you know that about a quarter of all of the candy sales in the United States, a quarter of all sales per year come from Halloween time?
Wow.
Pretty crazy, right?
And then it lasts all year round.
Except Smarties. Nobody buys those things.
I love Smarties. What's wrong with you?
This is why we don't live together anymore.
This is why we're not roomies anymore.
There's a lot of modern traditions that we have today that hark back to like the olden days. What when I say Halloween to you, what's the first thing you think?
TPing.
Well, in the old days, we had dirty bungholes. What's a tradition that
doesn't involve light vandalism?
What's a more family-friendly common tradition that you could think of?
Jack-o'-lantern.
Okay, so jack-o'-lanterns is actually a Irish At least according to the research that I've done, it seems like most of the jack-o'-lantern that we have today comes from Irish Christian stuff. There's actually a folktale associated with the jack-o'-lantern. First, the jack-o'-lanterns used to be made out of old turnips.
Boring.
Now, as a redheaded, fair-skinned, freckled man named Matthew James Corrigan, I could say leave it to the Irish to throw a turnip into the jack-o'-lantern. But there's a pretty interesting little folktale. There was a guy named Jack. He's walking home, drunk. He encounters who other than the devil and somehow convinces the devil to climb into a tree. Now, Jack is drunk, but he's not stupid. He sketches or carves the sign of the cross into the bark, the trunk of the tree, so the devil can't come down. Why the devil can't jump out? Maybe it's a tall tree. I'm not sure. Jack strikes a deal with the devil and says, I'll let you down, but you can never claim my soul. So now he's got this like free ticket to just live a life of sin, right?
Nice.
And I'm editorializing. This is not how the internet put the story.
Okay.
He's drinking. He's sinning. He's doing whatever he feels like. When he dies, because he went through all that sin, heaven's like, nope. He goes down to hell, and the devil's like, no, we made a deal. You're not allowed in here. So Jack is like stuck in limbo, but the devil throws a live coal straight from the fires to hell at Jack because he's the devil. It was freezing cold night. Jack gets the cold, puts it in an old hollowed out turnip to stop it from going out, and he uses that turnip to keep him warm and light the way to try to find a place for his soul to rest.
That's pretty good. I'm super glad that we turned it into pumpkins at some point, because can you imagine we're putting out all these crappy little turnips?
Well, here's the deal. The research I found, the way it worded it was immigrants to North America used the native pumpkin, which was larger and easier to carve. So it's like, oh, so Americans are fat and lazy and are like, I don't want to carve a turnip. Don't we have something bigger and softer? I don't want to do all that work. So that is the origin of the jack-o'-lantern.
If it was still turnips, it'd be like turnip pie. Like, yeah. Turnip spice lattes.
I was going to say, if you're listening in Ireland, please let us know if your Starbucks have turnip spice lattes. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Well, there's another big tradition, another holiday tradition. That I would love to hear more about. Rumi, do you know about trick-or-treating?
Oh, yeah. Trick-or-treating is when you go door-to-door. Wait. Oh, you don't want me to tell you what it is. You want me to tell where it came from.
Yeah, I know how to trick-or-treat, you idiot.
All right. So trick-or-treating has been around for
I'm just imagining now you have these children tied up next to your fireplace. You're condescending to them by explaining to them what they just did.
This is the trick portion of the program.
It's like a boy and a girl. I'm just imagining a little brother and sister tied, like in little like stereotypical costumes. There's like a witch and a werewolf or something. They look at each other and you're like, you guys are trick-or-treating. You rang my doorbell for candy. And they look at each other, look back at the camera, and roll their eyes.
Well, back in the 1930s, in England and in America, Christian kids would go door-to-door doing something called souling, which sounds really creepy. But they were basically, they would be like, give me candy or give me treats and cakes or small things, and I'll pray for your soul. And everybody was like, okay, great, just get out of here, kid. And they'd give them some stuff, and the kids would run away. But that just later became trick-or-treating.
I love the idea that it started off as, I will pray for your immortal soul if you give me some food. And it later turned into blackmail.
Yeah.
If you don't give me candy, I will mess up your house.
Yeah. Do you want a trick or do you want a treat?
It became an ultimatum.
Yeah.
At first, it was a pious thing Christians were doing. And then it turned into like, yo, I know you got candy. I got toilet paper. Let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal. You want a trick or you want a treat? And people are like, treats. Here you go. Treats, 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 treats all around. Kids are like, okay, okay. But if I come back next year, you better have them big candy bars.
Do people trick or treat at your apartment?
No.
Oh, really?
Nobody trick-or-treats out here.
Dude, when I lived in Sherman Oaks in an apartment, people wouldn't ring our apartment doorbell, so my wife and I would go sit on the bottom of our steps with a big bowl of candy.
Oh, that's cool.
But no one would come on our block, only on the block across the street. So, like, no lie, I would pick up a candy bar and, like, wiggle it in the wrapper, like, come here, kids. Creepy as hell, but got the kids over.
No, it was a creeper.
I didn't tie them up. They were free to go.
Oh, who do we we got a trick-or-treater.
A trick-or-treater? Let's see who it is.
Why, it's George from Famous Monsters.
Hey,
what's up, George?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Happy Halloween, man. Look at your costume.
Happy Halloween to you.
Tell us a little about your costume.
Like this?
What are you dressed up as, George?
Well, you're probably wondering why I'm holding a knife in my hand and I'm dressed up as a salt shaker. Well,
we had a couple questions.
Well, I've always wanted to be a salt with a deadly weapon, so I figured this is the best time to do so.
That's pretty good. I like that.
You know what's really funny is I didn't know where this joke was going. I should have
seen it in your face. I was like, watching you try to figure it out.
Shaker, salt.
Well done, George.
I was trying to think what movie had a killer salt shaker.
You stumped the Rocketeers. I was trying to figure it out too, but Rumi was working overtime. I could see his brain really working.
It's cranking. The steam was kind of like, this is a slug horror movie, obviously.
But now this has to happen now. Now there has to be a movie where someone is dressed up as a salt. No serious run-on thing. Someone will be like dressed up as cereal and he'll get killed or whatever. He becomes a serial killer and becomes this whole stupid joke.
Killer Kitchen? I'd watch the shit out of that.
Horrible puns.
I don't know if we ever told you, George, but for the last 12, 13 years, we've done Shitty Movie Sunday where we watch terrible movies on Sunday and just rip them apart with friends, and we've done it. I mean, we've done hundreds and hundreds of movies, but I would definitely watch this salt shaker horror movie. It probably would not be the worst movie we saw.
Guarantee you.
I think I can guarantee that, yeah.
All right, so we're talking Halloween, and I think Halloween, especially for me and Matt, has a lot of memories associated with it, and we want to throw to you first. What are some of your favorite childhood Halloween memories, either a costume or a moment?
Oh, man. I got two situations.
Let's do it. All right.
One is the fun side, where I remember being a young child, and you know everyone has like the pumpkin kind of bucket.
Yeah.
Where you get your candy and everything. You know, everyone had the pumpkin bucket. Or if you remember from the 80s, 90s, people had like those McDonald's.
Yeah,
bucket.
That's right. There was a witch. Yeah. There was a pumpkin.
Frankenstein.
That's right.
And it was a Frankenstein. Yeah. Me and my little brother had all of those. But we never actually used them to go trick-or-treating. We would always take, like, our king-size pillowcases.
Yeah.
And those would get jam-packed with candy. But that was stage one. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. So my parents were, like, hardcore Halloween trick-or-treaters.
From way back.
And so, like, we would hit up our town. And after that got filled, we would come to my dad, and he'd have a garbage bag, and we would dump it into the big hefty garbage bag, and then we hit the next town.
We
join up with like a friend.
Wow!
Did you go across county lines for this? Just like cover the whole state?
Once.
I'm imagining once like you and your siblings are like laying down under the seats in the van, and you're like crossing the town line. Your parents are like, "Quiet, kids! Shh, shh." Just us, officer. You got any trick-or-treaters back there? Oh, no.
To add more context, I'm from Massachusetts originally. So we would be around like the Salem, Massachusetts area. So it's like the capital of Halloween.
That was one of the best Halloweens I ever had in college, was going to Salem for Halloween.
Right? Exactly. No, I said I had two situations.
Yeah, well, so give us the other one.
One was that. That was one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second one was not a good one. And unfortunately, it's kind of tainted Halloween for me just a little bit in my memories.
You got to rock.
When I was in high school, I went on a date on Halloween, and I thought it was a date. I was wrong.
Oh, it turns out it was just a couple's costume. You were reading more into it.
I wish there was a costume in, like, a part of it, but there isn't. It was just like, it was a friend of mine. She's like, hey, you want to go to Salem with me? We can have Halloween together. I was like, that sounds great. I'd love to do that. All right. And it's like we just traveled all over Salem experiencing all the haunted houses. We were cuddling together. It was like, oh, this is the best. I love it.
Wait, there was cuddling?
Now, because, you know, like when there's the jump scares, you know, the girl jumps onto you. It's like, oh, so it's like those scared cuddles.
And you were like, I'm in. And she was like, well, this idiot will keep me safe for another 2 hours.
So prior to all this, I had like about three large Dunkachinos.
Okay.
America runs on Dunkin'.
For those who don't know, who are listening to this, Dunkin' Donuts you have Dunkin' Chinos, and it is the best thing ever. Nice iced coffees, and it's beautiful. I forgot that coffee really runs through you. And so, and it got to a point where, like, I had to go really bad.
Oh, no.
And there, for some odd reason, there was no bathrooms in sight. Like, every establishment that had a bathroom, it's like, oh, it's out of commission. Or, oh, we're not allowing people to use the bathroom if you're not buying anything.
Oh, no.
So I walked like 10 blocks until I get to the porta potty station. And, of course, there's a big-ass line. Eventually, I do get to one. And then the rest of the night, it's just me stuck in the porta potty.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Yeah.
But turns out the good news is you weren't missing a date.
Yeah.
Very true.
You're in there like, damn, what could I be missing? That girl was like, oh, my night is pretty much the same.
Still shitty.
Do you still know this girl?
Yeah, we're still friends till today.
Is she listening right now? Does she know what she missed out on?
I don't know, but I should definitely share this with her.
You totally should. Share it on a haunt. Yeah. Go on a hayride. Try to get that, rekindle that magic back. Let's do an episode of that where we try to get you and your old Halloween flame back together.
I'm not sure her husband or my wife would like that, but I guess it's worth a try.
All right. We got to plan this out better. I didn't see that coming.
There's a Halloween twist for you, Ruby.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
All right, Matt.
There's a twist.
Tell us, what do you got? What do you got a Halloween story for us?
Well, yeah, I got, let me try. I'm trying to think now, good and bad ones. I know that, like, one of my favorite Halloween moments, and this speaks to my practical special effects nature.
Yeah.
It was the first Halloween that I was allowed out without my parents.
Ooh.
So me and Rich Kalame, who had frickin' stiffed me the year before, because we were allowed out together the year before, and he was like, no, I want to stay with my family. I was like, you frickin' pans, you're ruining my Halloween. But Rich Kalame, I'm sure you're listening, he sacked up the second Halloween, and he decided we'll go out. We're walking around, and we had this cool Halloween. It was nothing special in and of itself, except I was Jason. I had a cheap little glow-in-the-dark hockey mask and
nice.
A little plastic knife.
I like that.
So, of course, we had Silly String. We each had a can or two. And
you deviant.
I had this. It was used for, I mean, this is what I did with it, right? We would spray each other or spray our friends as we came across them. I remember distinctly, I had green and he had yellow.
Uh-huh.
And I had this idea where I took the plastic knife and inserted it sideways through the Jason mask eye. So it was almost like what the final chapter with the knife sticking out.
Right.
And I wedged it in there. So I couldn't see, but I wasn't actually stabbing myself. And we sprayed the Silly String like gooey eye junk coming out. And I was probably, I was... fifth grade, sixth grade, maybe? Older than that. And I did it, and I thought it was so cool. And as we're walking, anyone that we saw was like, ew, gross. And I remembered it, like, vividly, this man and his wife, and they had a baby who was clearly out for their first trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
And he had the old camcorder. He was like, oh, man, I gotta tape this. So he was taping this kid walking around by himself, and I remember he was like, you are one sick puppy. And I remember like that was like the coolest thing some idiot could say to me on Halloween.
That's awesome, man.
That's great.
What about you, Rooms? I got a Halloween complaint, but let me hear a good memory from you first.
So this is very young me. My parents go out for Halloween, and I'm home with the babysitter, and there's trick-or-treaters, and she has a bowl.
Wait, are you sure this isn't a movie you saw?
It sounds like Halloween.
Your parents went out for Halloween, and you stayed home with a babysitter?
Yep, and the babysitter had the big bowl of candy, and it was Starbursts. And my parents came home while the trick-or-treating was still happening. They went out earlier. They weren't, like, going out to party. They just went out earlier to a friend's, a little get-together.
Oh, I imagine they were trick-or-treating.
Yeah, they were
trick-or-treating.
And they come home. And they said the whole time she was holding me on one hip and the bowl in the other, and what she couldn't see is I kept reaching around her back and just eating Starburst. And they come home, and my face is just covered in, like, colors. I'd been eating them with the wrappers on, just a mouthful of wrappers and just drooling it. And she just hadn't noticed that I had been cramming my little face full of Starbursts.
Best babysitter ever.
I
mean, I guess she didn't let you get murdered by a dude in your town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
George, did you imagine, how old did you imagine Aaron in that story? Because I imagine him like 4 or 5.
Well, he said very young. I imagine still old enough to go trick-or-treating. But then when he said holding in her arms, I was like, oh, wait, how young is he? Is he like 3 years old?
Yeah,
but then I thought you were like 7 because you said you reached around her back. And I was waiting to hear, like, I reached around trying to unhook her bra. And you said candy. It's like, oh, okay, no, he's a real young kid.
I was really little. Yeah, old enough to be carried in one arm. That's funny. So another quick question. George, what was your favorite Halloween costume you've ever had?
Oh, man. Favorite costume?
That's a pretty good one.
I gotta say, I think this is only my favorite because I rocked it for probably like 4 years in a row.
There you go.
And that was my Ninja Turtles costume. I was Michelangelo.
Whoa.
A party dude.
Yeah.
What kind of shell did you have?
That, it was a hard shell.
Wow.
Was it a store-bought or did you make
it? No, my mom bought it for me. It was the one time like my mom like kind of went a little all out for me.
Nice.
Like it was still the plastic mask that we all remembered having as kids.
Right.
But the costume was a solid costume. Like it even had like holsters for the nunchucks.
Nice.
And everything.
Nice.
Yeah. And I was able to wear that thing 4 years in a row. I remember that. And it was like the best thing. I was like, it's not broken. Why get another costume?
Exactly.
What about you, Rumi? What's your favorite costume?
All right. I got two quick asides about this. One of them, I, for some reason, was obsessed with the Phantom of the Opera as a kid. And I dressed up as him.
You know, like normal kids.
Yeah, repeatedly, over and over again. And every year it got a little more sophisticated, like doing the makeup, like putting scar wax on my face or like doing it. And then when the musical became huge, like the Andrew Lloyd Webber, I was pissed because it was like, Phantom of the Opera doesn't wear a half mask. He doesn't wear a half mask. That's stupid. I was so pissed off about that half mask. I was like, he wore a full, like it was a full mask because I was obsessed with the Lon Chaney movie. The original.
Right. Sure.
And even the Claude Rains ones, he had a full mask over his face. But the second story I have, again, this is probably slightly older than the Starburst story. I had one of the original, like, Frankenstein plastic masks that you know, it had a single string around, but it had real, like, wig hair.
Mm-hmm.
So black, like, stringy, gross wig hair. And it was a bloody mask. And I loved it. And I would wear that. And I was going to preschool. And I'm like, I'm dressing up as Frankenstein. I had that. My dad's motorcycle gloves, an inside-out Notre Dame jersey, because it was green, you know, and, like, cowboy boots. And that was my Frankenstein costume.
This is the same kid who was pissed that there was a half-mask Phantom of the Opera? Okay, cool. Let me just check it.
But this is a younger version of it.
just checking.
So,
I got to ask, how small are your dad's hands that you're able to rock his gloves?
No, they're
preschool.
They were huge, dude. They were huge on me.
Like, Mr. Aaron.
I mean, these were some like OJ isotoners, man. They were like black, but I was so tiny. They came up like half my arm. So like I looked ridiculous, like a cartoon, like giant hands and cowboy boots and this oversized shirt that covered most of my body and this hideous mask. And I remember this, and I will put this out here right now. This entire memory is like the opening scene of the original Halloween. My entire memory is through like the holes and the eye holes in the mask. Kids crying. And I get sent to the office, and they're like trying to take the mask off me because like you're upsetting the children. And I wouldn't do it. And they call my parents. My parents show up, and my mom's like, "What's going on?" They're like, "He's scaring the kids. He won't take his mask off." And they're like, "So he's Frankenstein.
Let him be." Day a year.
Yeah, he's getting one day a day. It's Halloween. That's fine. And they ended up just taking me home.
I remember you told me that story, and I was bummed because you later went to a mental institution, and then Donald Pleasance came looking for you.
He's pure evil.
I'm actually just imagining the costume you just said with the boots and the giant jersey inside out and the mask. Covered in Starbucks, and you're the Phantom of the Opera is here around Starbucks.
You almost made me do a spit take on you.
Inside my mind.
All right, Rumi, did you ever do Phantom of the Opera?
No, I'm going to tell you the opposite, man. Here's my deal, right? I I didn't like store, like my parents were all for store-bought costumes.
Yeah.
And I remember the first one I remember doing at school was He-Man. And it was that shitty vinyl. I know what you're thinking, Rumi, because you see me now and you're like, dude doesn't even need a costume.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Because you've both seen me in hairy underwear. But it was that shitty like vinyl costume with the, you know, the vacuform plastic face mask with an elastic band that snapped immediately.
The little slit in the mouth that cut your tongue out.
Oh my God.
That was a cool costume because it looked like He-Man, but I am anal as hell and really OCD, and I couldn't stand costumes that said what they were.
For example,
I was Terminator 2. I was Terminator 2 one year, and the costume came with a faux black leather jacket and sunglasses. The sunglasses on one of the arms had a T2 symbol, which drove me batshit. So I immediately scratched it off with like a penny or something. It came right off. But on the breast, like the chest of the jacket, was a T2 logo. And I was like, first of all, that's the opposite of what a Terminator is, right? It's an infiltration unit. But get over that. I was like, where would he get his own jacket?
Yeah.
And I tried so hard to keep that lapel of the jacket open and over that whole Halloween. Ugh. But the worst one was my parents got me, did you guys have Halloween costumes / PJs? Like, you could wear them as PJs all year, but then one night you were allowed to wear them out and it was your Halloween costume.
Yes. Yeah, I had a Superman.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a Dracula. Did you have one, George?
I had a ninja. That's what I had.
My Dracula was pretty bitchin' because it was all black. It was long sleeve. I believe the cuffs were red, and it had a Velcro cape.
Yeah.
And you're thinking...
The little two little tabs?
Yes. You're thinking, cool, right? Except that it had a giant glow-in-the-dark Bela Lugosi Dracula face across the whole chest. And as a kid, I remember thinking, why would he have that? And I hated it. I had to go as Dracula like that one year. And I remember thinking, like, it's cool that it glows in the dark. And I remember walking around my house at night and seeing it and thinking it was cool. But not on Halloween when I, like, because, like, you walk up to someone and they're like, who are you supposed to be? And you just sadly look down at your glow-in-the-dark chest.
Oh, man, we need to make a vampire movie where the vampires all just wear shirts with their own faces on it. Oh, I would wear that now, though. Ironically.
Well, irony wasn't a thing back in the 80s. We took that shit literal. Everything, you were either doing things or you were not doing things. You weren't doing it on purpose to be funny.
I imagine that
George,
that you as like a Care Bear / Dracula now. Where like you did like your Care Bear Dracula stare.
That's what it was. It was Bloodsucker Bear.
Off your tummy.
Oh, that's awesome. Do you remember the Care Bear animated movie and how freaking scary it was?
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember the specifics, but I remember they were like gooey monsters and they were like trying to make these kids drink root beer. And I just remember being like, don't drink that root beer.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid, man. Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Because they were going to Transylvania to try to recruit Vlad the Impaler. They were like, hey, that dude's got the same shirt we have.
Oh, man.
Well, Halloween is not all about costumes.
No.
There are some other really... says the two dressed as a salt shaker. there are some other, I guess, less iconic costumes that are... thought about or that are often compared to or often thought about when we talk about Halloween. And there's a big movie franchise, Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
Neither did Haddonfield. Halloween is a, what is it? I guess like, I think there's 37 of those now.
Are there?
five, six, seven, eight, nine. There's eight originals. There's two more zombie remakes, and then we're supposed to get another remake.
Another one coming up.
I didn't remember what I counted. 34? Is that what I said? 37? Yeah. Six, seven, eight.
Did you carry the two? You got to carry the two.
The Rob Zombie two. So, yeah, there's eight originals that have that were, you know, the I guess in the classic sense. Then there's the two Rob Zombie ones. So that's 10 have already been made.
Yeah. I mean, he's chasing on Jason's heels, but I don't know if he'll ever catch up, but we'll see. But, yeah, the Halloween franchise, this is one of the grandfathers of the slasher genre. There had been a few movies that kind of danced on this, but the first Halloween is credited as being one of the first slasher films ever made, directed by John Carpenter.
Yeah, and I remember it. There's a lot of, we went to film college, and like in multiple classes, we talked about this, and that doesn't necessarily make or break anything, but it's important. It's an important thing to realize that it's in the public conscious so much, and it really did help to find not only a horror genre, but specifically the slasher subgenre, right?
It really set the stage for it. How do you feel about this franchise, George?
Yeah, so I gotta say, how I feel about the franchise, like, well, it's not my top. It's still something that lingers as like one of the like an unforgettable franchise. Like, I remember being a young kid and finding out like the origin of the mask. I think that's what really like drew me in to the whole thing.
The true life origin of the mask?
Well, at least one of the stories. I remember, like, because I was a Star Trek fan as a kid, and hearing that the mask was originally like William Shatner's face from like Captain Kirk, and it just had no paint on it. I was like, that is so awesome how they took something so iconic. And I don't even associate him with it anymore. It's like, I just see Michael Myers. I don't see Captain Kirk on that thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought that was like a really cool thing about it. It wasn't as hardcore in your face as other scary movies were.
Sure.
You know, it wasn't like, get that kill, get that kill. It was more just, it really knew how to draw that suspense. You know, I thought that was always a really cool thing about it.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's most memorable about not just the franchise, but that specific the first one or two movies, was it really was establishing that slasher and that type of horror, that type of boogeyman-esque type thing where someone's coming after you, he's not running. It's like it's exactly what you said, George. He's not in your face. It's not like run, run, run. There's a lot of kills that happen off camera, and then Rumi, you call them funhouse kills, right? Where like you find the body later.
Well, it's the final girl's funhouse run, and it's when she starts.
Right.
Everybody's been killed, and this movie really set that up when Jamie Lee Curtis goes through the house and finds all her dead friends, and then has to face off with him, and that is definitely like a big part of this. Is she doesn't really realize what's happening until she just goes through this like home alone gauntlet of dead friends.
I think that was a big thing about that really stuck out for me was that.
George, do you have a favorite movie or a favorite like something favorite about the series, because it's so big?
You know, it's, I don't know if it's my favorite per se, but I loved the concept of this, and it's too bad it didn't succeed. And it was part three. Like, Part Three: Season of the Witch. It wasn't a good film, but I love the fact that they were trying to turn Halloween into like this anthology piece. And it's like, what if it had succeeded? And like every sequel afterwards, we could have just had like a different story of what happened on Halloween.
Yeah,
you know, it could have went anywhere. It could have been like the Twilight Zone of movie franchise, but they dropped the ball, of course.
They did. We just watched this together to kind of refresh our memories about it. And the whole time we were thinking, like, what if this... It's tough when you start a franchise with two films with an iconic character that you create and becomes really, like, a big, like, icon. And then you go, no, we're doing something different for the third one. But if they had gone this route the whole time, like, what could we have gotten? What would have been another chapter in this anthology?
Yeah, right? And part three, we had this very meta-esque thing going on where, like, it... Remember, you watched there was a part where he's watching the TV and there's like a commercial, and it's a commercial for Halloween Part One.
Right. You know? It's not that right. Exactly.
And I love that they kind of poked at it, like, "Hey, look what we're doing there. Look at that." You know.
And it was. I love the idea of the anthology. I just don't understand why you do two of something and then are like, "Oh no, wait, we'll do anthology."
Yeah.
So if that movie had if Halloween Three had succeeded, let's say commercially, would they then have done Halloween 4 would have been the sequel to Halloween 3, and then the next one would have been new? Or, like, what are the rules for the anthology when you've already done two movies that fit into its own thing? I'm a huge fan of Halloween 3, because, like I said, we do Shitty Movie Sunday every week. I love Halloween 3. It's billed as the night no one comes home, because the first one was the night he came home. It's so good. I love that movie so much.
I was pleasantly surprised because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But there's something like fun about it, and the premise.
Yeah, you know what's fun about it? I'll tell you.
Oh my God.
Bump two more days to Halloween. Halloween. Ruby was dying every time that he's like, this is the fourth time that commercial's been on.
Every time you could see, anytime you could see a TV in the background, you're like, I bet that song's coming on again.
TV or radio, there was no escaping that thing.
So, a fun fact, in that movie, he goes into, there's like a trophy room that has all these like interesting clocks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they have all these interesting like masks and stuff. And you said that's the Don Post studio for real. That's actually
where they're making the masks in the movie. I don't know if the part that you're talking about is supposed to be in the same place. Right. I don't know if that actually is part of Don Post. But
in that scene, we see a Tor Johnson mask.
Yeah.
Now, Tor Johnson was the big zombie, scary bruiser guy in the famous film Plan 9 from Outer Space. You know this one, George?
Yeah.
Classically bad. Ed Wood directed it. Tor Johnson's the big guy in it. But his Halloween mask, to this day, is one of the best-selling Halloween masks of all time.
Wow, really?
Pretty interesting.
Now, the reason behind this was it was cheap. You could get it for like $20. It was relatively generic. I mean, most people don't know Plan 9 from Outer Space, but it's a scary big guy mask. So it was cheap. It was generic. It was creepy as hell. He had the weird eyes and the weird scar on his head. And adults who came into Halloween shops looking for a quick costume last minute were like, that one, cheap, creepy, done.
Is that guy Scarface? How much is it?
$20.
All right. Better than face on my chest Dracula. I'll take it. Tor Johnson walked in. He's like, me can't get that mask. I'll be Dracula.
Well, you know what one of the worst selling masks of all time was?
Hit me.
It was E.T.
Why is that?
Why?
Well, E.T. was like a $60-$70 mask because it was licensed. It came with something that said E.T. on it, which you hate. And parents were like, I'm not spending $80 on a mask for my kid. And adults didn't want to buy it because tall E.T. is just stupid.
Can I say, right now, if I knew that mask was available, I would buy that mask. And there's a reason why.
E.T.?
There's a reason. Because in high school, my best friend, he was terrified of E.T. to the point where, like, we found out how scared he was, where we kind of made a plan, and we invited him over to our place. We had a huge, like, 70-inch screen TV, and my dad put E.T. on the screen, and he paused it. And he's like, oh, Marcel, come into the living room. We want to show you something really quick. He comes to the living room, and bam, right in his face is this huge E.T. with a glowing finger. And he fell on his ass trying to run out of that apartment. It was so bad.
Oh, my gosh. That's so mean.
Yeah.
Part of me wants to make fun of him for being afraid of E.T.
Yeah.
But the other part of me has seen the movie and is like, I get it.
Yeah. E.T.'s super creepy. E.T.'s so creepy. I don't think my wife likes E.T. either.
Let's go see. Do you have a mask?
Yeah.
pause it on the screen really quick. Kate?
You've heard my hypothesis of E.T. I think E.T. is the scariest alien ever put in a movie. Not necessarily in the movie you see him in, but because of what it puts forth. And let me lay this out. E.T. is an alien that has a symbiotic relationship with our children, can mind meld with them, control them from a distance, and when you try to take the alien away and separate them, the child dies. We're just lucky that E.T. was just drinking beers and, like, falling over. That's pretty messed up.
You looked at it on a deeper level.
Yeah.
I watched it about a year ago, and the last time I watched it, my takeaway was that Drew Barrymore calls one of her brothers penis breath at the beginning. And I remember thinking, like, what a deep insult to throw at your brother. You know, you're probably heterosexual brother. It's like, think of what 5-year-old Drew Barrymore is implying of her 8-year-old brother. She burned the hell out of him.
like he just pointed out, burn. Something deep happened with him and that alien. So maybe he did have penis breath.
That's true. I've seen less scrotal looking aliens. Than
But yeah, Predator, Xenomorph, they're fine. I'll go up against them any day. E.T., run away. Although, I'm probably out of the age range that E.T. prefers.
Yeah, you'd be safe.
That's probably true. I feel like you would probably be dogging E.T., and he'd be, like, trying to get away from you. He'd be like, I'm busy. Like, what about Saturday? Phone E.T. later.
Oh, man.
Well, so, we have Khan on quite a tangent. What are we talking about? Alien and children?
We're talking about the Halloween franchise.
Yeah. Halloween franchise.
Let me ask you both this, because I'm actually interested. From what I know of both of you, I would love to hear you guys talk about this. The Rob Zombie reboots or remakes or sequels or however you want to classify them, how do you guys feel, I guess in general, but if specifically, let's go with the Rob Zombie, the first one, which is supposed to be, I guess, a retelling or an updated version of the original Halloween.
Yeah.
What are your guys' feeling on that? George, why don't you go first?
I gotta say, initially, I kind of like the fact that he gave an intro, like this backstory to Michael Myers. Because it did go on for too long. I think it's like what, half of the movie is his origin. And I was like, I don't need that much. Like, if you just want to give a little bit, that's fine. But I always kind of like the fact that for no good reason, no reason whatsoever, this boy just went crazy and decided to kill his sister.
Sure.
You know, I always kind of like that. Like, I don't need much of a motive for my bad guy to be a bad guy. Just let him be bad. But I'm okay.
That's well put.
Yeah. And I got to say, what's really good about it is like, he was so brutal with this one. And I enjoyed that because I'm about a slaughterhouse. I love the blood and the gore, so I'm all for that. The one thing I will say that I thought was great and bad all at the exact same time was where, like, it's almost paying homage to part one or the original part one, is that when you look at the murder weapons and you see the amount of blood that's on the person, it's like something's not matching up here. It's like there's a speck of blood on the bat, but yet his brains are hanging out of his head. That doesn't make sense. Something's off here. You know, and it was like that in the original one. You see the knife that he stabbed her with? There's like a speck of blood, but there's like a puddle of blood behind her head. It's like, okay, what's going on here? Blood department, get your shit together.
He's wiping. That's what it is. Michael Myers is a wiper.
He likes his knives to be clean. I definitely think I agree with exactly what you said. There's a little too much backstory, and a little bit seeing like his childhood and being like, okay, kill those adults is one thing, but in the original, like, killing the family or killing his sister, like, it's like, oh man, that's a horrible thing for him to do. In the reboot, it's kind of like, well, they're assholes, so
yeah,
go for it, dude.
They really hit that note hard.
Yeah.
And I feel like anytime, I don't want to see my villains as children. I don't want to see my villains where they came from. I want to see what they're doing now, because, I mean, same thing with the prequels. Like, Darth Vader, you're kind of screwing it up for me. Michael Myers, you're kind of over-explaining his origin. And that didn't work. But I will say, I know the editor of Rob Zombie's films, Glenn Garland. Hmm. He's a phenomenal editor. He did both of these Halloweens. He did Devil's Rejects. And he also was the editor for the original Roger Corman Fantastic Four.
Oh, what? That's my jam.
Right? Oh, I can't high five. I raised my hand like I was going to high five.
George
you.
And audience, I'm not exaggerating. Aaron's hand went into the air.
Nice.
For a high five. I watched him do it. I swear it really happened.
But yeah, hearing these stories about working with Rob Zombie, I mean, the guy has a true passion for the source material, and I think he really went into it with such dedication that I think that shows, and I think there's definitely a big love letter in making this movie. And so, you know, when he gets into the mask and starts tearing things up, I'm into it.
Yeah, for sure. You know what I liked too with this one was that at the end, like, the fact that there was this connection with him and his baby sister, and like he that he didn't want to kill her. It's like, I like that he shows her the picture, and it's like saying, like, see, look, me, you, we're a family. But she doesn't know, you know? And then, yeah.
Right.
And then she freaking turns on him. And then once that happens, it's like, oh, well, F this bitch. And it's like no holds barred. I thought that was a really cool moment.
There's a lot about it I don't like, and I would ultimately pass on it. I'm not on board. However, it does do a lot of cool things, and one of the things it does do is, like you guys have both said, it shines the light on areas of the mythos and the history and the story that the originals did not. So, obviously, like, the backstory, that's a huge one, right?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. It hit a lot of notes. There's a kill where he's dressed up like a ghost,
yeah.
or like the other guy is dressed up like a ghost. You think it's him, and it's a very fast kill, which is, if you've seen the original, the second that shot starts, you know, oh, this is like the original, but then, boom, it's very different than the original, but still has a nod to it.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of, it's almost like, I think Rob Zombie is a good filmmaker. I just wish he would make a good film. Like, that's how I feel.
I think I've said that once before.
Right? I liked House of a Thousand Corpses, I think, was pretty fun. The next one was, it took me a minute to get into, but it's okay. I think he's just a little too exploitation for me. And the stuff he hits on, he's a little too much about, like, let me show some really physical and emotional trauma for, like, 4 minutes straight, and you're like, I get it. Like, I would just watch the news if I wanted to be sad.
Yeah. There's a kill that's in both the original and in the remake, and it's something that's always kind of like, I laugh at it, but it kind of bothers me. I always wonder how people feel about it. It's when he kills the boyfriend with the knife, and he stabs him so hard that he hangs from the wall,
right. But
his body stays so still. And it's like, there's no way that your body can hang like that from getting stabbed with a knife into the wall. Like, you would just flop over. But no, he's cemented by a knife.
Yeah, it's kind of silly because he stabs him right through the gut. And it's like, there's no way, unless you were like, there is no way. I was trying to think.
I could do it.
Mythbusters, get on. I know you're listening right now. Adam Savage.
This is the second or third time we've challenged them.
Mythbusters, we summon you.
Give me a knife and someone you don't like and a door. And I will. I think it could work.
I love how certain you are. You're like, I could do that.
I feel that way about most things, especially if it's a challenge. If some of the things that can't be done, my first reaction is, I probably could. Maybe not the first time. I'd have to stab a couple of idiots, but I could get there.
One of the things is, through the years that I've known him, I've learned to always bet on that. When he says he can do something... So,
that's true.
So even though I would totally, I don't think it's possible, but he would figure out a way to make this happen.
That's true. I'll paraphrase what Ruby's saying, and I think Aaron is saying that he hasn't seen me fail it too much.
Well, when you get that Matt look, and you're like, I got this, I got this. The quick example was, somebody said, if you were giving me a piggyback ride, somebody on your shoulders, could we switch positions so that I am now sitting on your shoulders without one of the people touching the ground? So only two pairs of feet on the ground at one time. And everybody said, no way, it's impossible. Matt and this kid figured it out.
For like, we practiced for like a month.
I feel like I got to see this now.
I got to remember how to do that. I think, here, Rumi, put your leg up here. I think I could do it.
No, we're talking about Halloween. Yeah. Get back to Halloween.
Yeah, get back to the killing.
So after the third one, I think the first two are phenomenal films. The third one has a special place in our hearts. I think we've all agreed that.
Sure.
After that, what happens to the franchise in your opinion? I feel it gets real weird. But which ones stand out and which ones fall apart?
I love when they're like, oh, by the way, this is like a cult thing and there's a lot of cult BS.
Yeah.
Like a secret society behind him. And by that time, you're like...
Like he has a purpose all of a sudden.
Yeah, which is like different, but you're like, okay, I've watched this now for 4 or 5 installments.
Yeah.
Tell me... And he's still killing stuff. It's not like Shin Godzilla where they're like, hey, know that giant monster movie? We're going to talk about it in this boardroom for the whole movie. It's like Michael Myers is killing people while you're finding out that there's this secret society. I'm on board. It's not Shakespeare. It's not the best evolution of a character I've ever seen. But, I mean, I bought the $150 Scream Factory box set this month. So,
so they got your money.
Yeah, no, I'm on board. George, do you like where they take the character and the series as it progresses?
I always kind of felt with that, like, I love how I feel with, like, the Rob Zombie thing. It's like they tried to give him more backstory in a way with that by having him be, like, this greater thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, can he just be a crazy guy, you know? If it was, like...
Yeah, I liked when he killed his banging sister for no reason.
Why would you do that? I don't need to know why. Just do it again.
Yeah. Keep going. I do like how they kind of do the callbacks, like, later when his niece starts killing people. That was interesting. Like, they have the sort of the rehash of the first movie.
The little girl.
So Daniel Harris.
She was a great actress, too, which I think actually makes a huge difference.
Yeah, she did a good job. And I don't know. The Is it the return of Michael Myers? That one bugs me a lot because the whole time it's like Loomis discovering murders and we see very few. It's just he finds like 20 bodies, but we see like three.
All right. I can see that and I can understand why you'd be against that. I don't think I hold it against them. The one that I do, like, of the whole original series, Resurrection is stupid as hell.
Yes. Thank you for saying this.
Like, it just is like, it self-contained in its own movie is really stupid. But if you backpedal to H2O, although it's called H2O and there's no water in the movie, it's a real nice, like, H2O should be the one, like, should be the Jaws 3 of the Halloween series, right? It should be 3D, it should take place in a SeaWorld-like underwater lab. Right? I mean, if you're going, don't call it H2O.
Sea Lab meets Halloween.
Wouldn't that be odd? I'd watch the shit out of that. Michael Myers, go steal her idea. But no,
it's Deep Blue Sea, but with Michael Myers and sharks. Michael Myers riding a shark.
I'm trying to think, has Samuel Jackson been in a Halloween movie? If not, this is his chance, then he should be in.
Not yet. Oh, and then you get LL Cool J to write the theme song, right?
Yeah.
Deep Blue, my hat is a William Shatner mask.
But, I mean, Halloween Resurrection had Busta Rhymes. Bus a bus, man.
We didn't do anything. And H2O was a real nice stopping point. We had Jamie Lee Curtis came back. The story wasn't convoluted. It kind of ignored some of the previous ones without, like, shitting on them. And it was a nice way to end the series. It kind of made sense. And then the series kind of ends with this other reality TV show one that doesn't really make sense. I think that's got like some crappy kills in it, and I don't know, it just doesn't have, at that point it feels like, guys, you probably should have kept this one in the stable at least for a little while longer. At least that's my opinion.
No, I'm with you, because like H2O, that ending, like that showdown, it was invigorating, like having, like, she finally came back and she was like, you know what, I'm done with you, and just to make sure I'm done with you, I'm taking off your head. And it's like, that was, it was so intense. And then to find out it was just someone else, it's like, no, you just de-glorified the awesomeness that she came back for.
Although I did like that, I did like how they negated the ending of H2O and Resurrection when they explain. And that was, I read that was apparently what was going to happen all along. That wasn't something they thought about after H2O ended. They always planned that was going to be a red herring kill. But I thought that was a great idea. That was a really smart way to do it. But yeah, that they should have ended the series with that last one.
H2O had a great cast too. I mean, LL Cool J, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Janet Leigh, Josh Hartnett. Like,
oh, that's right, Janet Leigh was in it. Yeah,
you, Michelle Williams. I mean, you have a great cast for this, and they should have left it at that because Busta Rhymes just couldn't carry that movie.
Busta Rhymes is good in a comedy, but you shouldn't be putting him in as a starring role in something like this.
It was rough, and if you're gonna go comedy, but they didn't. Like, it was just Busta Rhymes was the funny guy in the movie, and it just does not. These movies just don't work as sort of the comedy, sort of cheesiness that I think a lot of other slashers have gone to. Here's an interesting tidbit to go back to the predecessors of this franchise. Do you guys know a little movie called Black Christmas?
Hell yeah, I know Black Christmas.
I love this movie. This is great. But there's a little rumor about this movie from the director, Bob Clark. Yeah. He said that when talking to John Carpenter, he was talking to John Carpenter about doing a sequel to Black Christmas,
right,
a movie about Halloween. And John Carpenter was like, oh, I'm already making a movie about Halloween, and they talked about it, and Bob Clark, the director of Black Christmas, says that Halloween is a spiritual sequel to Black Christmas.
Yes, I've heard that before as well, and I kind of get that, but Black Christmas to me is, I guess you don't see the villain like you see the villain Michael Myers in Halloween.
Yeah.
But Black Christmas is one of my all-time favorite horror movies for sure. I love that movie. George, you've seen the original?
Yeah, it's been a long time I've seen the original. I remember watching the remake and being like, okay, that happened. And like wishing I watched the original again.
Yeah, the original is just so good. And I can see it being, and I have heard and I've read that it's been that their director credited as a spiritual sequel. And I kind of get that, but
yeah.
I keep it separate in my mind. It doesn't need to be the same.
So Halloween movies are fun. We love watching movies on Halloween. But at the end of the day, movies are the scary movies that we watch at Halloween are just visual ghost stories, visual scary stories. And one of my favorite parts of Halloween is ghost stories.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. Did you guys, was that something your family did? Did you guys tell ghost stories?
I mean, growing up, we went camping a lot, and telling scary stories around a campfire, there's nothing better than that.
Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
There's nothing better that after you tell a story and you hear nothing but the crackling of a fire, and then the next sound you hear, you're like, what was that? What was that? And you freak yourself out.
The next sound you hear is your dad somehow frozen stiff against a board, even though there's no way he'd be stabbed like that and could maintain that position.
But growing up, there was a series of books that had some of my favorite scary stories in them.
Oh, I know where you're going. I know where you're going.
And they were straight up called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I love that series.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. George, you remember these?
Oh, my. I right now can say I'm holding it in my hand as we speak.
I've read, I just went back home. I live in Los Angeles. My parents and sister live in Connecticut. I just went home and cleared out my last bins of things that I had it like stored at my family's place. And I found I have all three books. And within the last, I would say, month and a half, I read all three books cover to cover. And wow, what a great taste of nostalgia and creepy. Like, it was okay to scare kids back then, you know? Yeah. And scare the shit out of them.
It's so true. And you know what? And with that book, like, for me, like, I loved reading as a kid. But I was also an artist. I still am today, thanks to Famous Monsters. But the art in this book was super creepy.
Super creepy.
Like, the artist was Stephen Gamble. And this dude, like, I don't know what was going on in his mind. But, like, I feel like he had to have been some kind of crazy to come up with some of the things he came up with.
Sure.
You know, like, I don't know if you guys remember the story called the Big Toe.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And like, it wasn't super scary of a thing, but I remember seeing the picture of the boy looking at the toe in the ground. Yeah. And I was like, the boy is creepier than anything. He has this huge head, and he's like kind of hunched over. And it really adds to the story of like this family that eats this toe. And I was like, this is so weird. I was like, sixth grade reading this, and everyone else thought I was a weirdo because I'm reading this story. I was like, look at this story about this toe.
Yeah.
It's like in a garden, right? The boy has a hoe, like, and he takes it and eats it. Yeah.
Oh, it's so gnarly. And all these illustrations, the Stephen Gamble illustration, you're right. They are, I think, as good as any of the stories in the book, but everything looked like it had spider webs and hairs growing off of it. Everything had the style of like creepy spider webs and hair just strewn out of the ink lines, and it was like so unsettling. And he could draw a skeleton like nobody's business.
Yeah, it's there's, I'm trying to think of some of my favorite stories, and I have a ton of them. There are some really, really good ones.
Well, what's one of your ones that stick out in your mind, Matt?
Okay, there's one. It's really weird. It's called Wait Till Martin Comes. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
It's this dude walking. He's walking outside. It starts to storm. He finds an old house, goes in, starts a fire, starts to fall asleep. He wakes up, and there's a cat next to him. He pets the cat, starts to fall asleep. He wakes back up, and there's a bigger cat next to the other cat. And the other cat, it says something. It talks English to him. So the bigger cat says, shall we do it now? And the smaller cat says, no, let's wait till Martin comes. So the guy says, oh, I must be dreaming. He falls back asleep. He wakes up. There's a third cat in the room, and it's the size of a tiger. And that cat looks down and goes, shall we do it now? And the other two cats say, no, let's wait till Martin comes. And the guy gets up, jumps out the window, and runs away and says, when Martin comes, you tell him I couldn't wait. Which I think is like a real fun ending to it, but like, shit, man. Can you imagine waking up and there's a cat talking?
Yeah. A talking animal's creepy enough.
Period.
But the fact that he's like, hey, wait till this bigger cat comes. You're like,
and they're having, like, it's not just a cat talking. It's two cats having a conversation about something that they're planning to do. Shall we do it now implies that they both know what they're talking about.
Oh, my gosh. George, do you have a favorite from these books?
Man, I gotta say it's probably a toss up between The Red Spot and The Wolf Girl. And the thing about The Wolf Girl that always got to me was like, do you guys remember this movie with Howie Mandel back in the '80s called Walk Like a Man?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Yes and no. So
tell Ruby.
So in this movie, people who've never seen it before, Howie Mandel is, as a child, he's left behind in the wilderness. And he's raised by a pack of wolves. He becomes like a wolf boy, pretty much. And eventually he gets brought back into the normal world where he has to try to assimilate. And then reading the story of the wolf girl, it's kind of like that, but with a girl. Yeah. But she doesn't get to assimilate. She stays as a wolf. And I always thought, like, man, this is like the other side of that story. This is the twisted side where it's like, that's it. You become like this animal that kills people. And that's it. Oh, I always thought that was super cool, you know. And I was like, that comedy could have had a dark side to it. I want to see that dark side, and I always kind of thought that when I saw that movie. And this story gave me that. It gave me that fulfillment of like, this is what would happen, you know. Oh, wow, you can't become human again.
One of my favorite ones, and I don't know if it's in which book it's in. There's three of these books, and the one that I really like has another talking animal in it, and it's the Me Tai Doty Walker.
I love that freaking story, man.
And I don't even know what that means, but it's a kid who's like, he's dared to stay in a haunted house, and he's like, I'm not scared. And he shows up with his dog, and him and the dog are waiting for something to happen, and a head falls out of the fireplace and starts talking to him, and the dog talks back, but they're talking nonsense. And it's just that nonsense that kind of scared me really bad, because it's just like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what's going on. Why is the dog talking, and why is there a head in this house that talks to dogs? It was just so bizarre and fun, and at the end of the day, it just left me feeling really creeped out.
George, I don't know if you know this or not, but Aaron and I, for Halloween, as a companion to the Famous Monsters episode, over on the Launchpad podcast, we have done some radio plays of some of these. So we have... Oh. We got some voice acting, we've got some sound effects, we did some of our favorite stories, and we're really proud of how they came out. So you and everybody else, you guys should go check these out at the Launchpad Podcast. We worked really hard on them, and I hope that as you guys listen to these, they sound like how they did in your head when you read them.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I mean, it's this was really fun to read these stories again and kind of figure out which ones we liked, which ones would sound good. Because some of these stories are great, but they just wouldn't sound right being with sound effects and stuff. It wouldn't make as much sense as some of the other ones.
One of my other favorite ones, it's The Three Men on a Train. And I don't know which book this is in. There's three of the books. Three Men on the Train, it's these guys on a subway. And one of the guys in between them is acting really weird. And they end up getting up and walking, one of them gets off the train, the other guy's left with this creepy dude on the train, and it's just describing the sound and the lights on the train, and then this guy slumps over onto him, and he's been shot. And I was just like, that is so creepy. They've been riding with this dead guy the whole time, and it's just, that was one that really creeped me out. Also because, like, you know, when you ride on the subway, you're just like, I wouldn't know what to do if there's a dead body. I'd freak out.
You'd be high-fiving everyone. If there was a dead body slumped on the subway chair, I feel like I could handle it. But if he was impaled at an impossibly stiff way, now that's where I draw the line. there's so many good ones. There's a lot of good ones about cannibalism. There's a couple where there's kids in jeopardy.
Spiders bursting out of your face.
Ugh, that's the grossest one because I already don't like spiders. And that's another one, George, like what you said. The picture for that one with all this boil on this woman's face bursting and baby spiders running out. That's one of those pictures that, like, I, for the last 34 years of my life, have been able to close my eyes and see exactly. I didn't ever need to see it again. I know what that looks like.
That one affected me a lot when I was younger because I remember reading it and seeing it. And like, I actually like spiders, but I remember I got my first pimple in the same spot that the girl has in the image. And all I could think is like, oh my God, this is it. It's going to happen. Like a spider's going to explode out of my face. Because I never had a pimple before. I knew what they were, but I wasn't thinking logically at that point in time.
were you disappointed when that didn't happen? Or
I was thanking the Lord that it happened. Oh, my God.
Looking up Stephen Gammell as the artist of this, he's done some books that are not not horror, but they're still really creepy.
Yeah.
He did a book called Hey Pancakes and Humble Pie, but they're still, even though they're colorful and fun and everybody's happy, they still are drawn with all like the creepy spider webs.
Dude, I would not eat a single thing drawn by that guy. No way. If he designed my wedding cake, I would be a bachelor forever.
When Guillermo del Toro's art exhibit came to Los Angeles, I had the pleasure of going to see it, and he has one of the most amazing collections of art and horror art. He has some original Basil Gogos, some of the original paintings that were Famous Monsters of Filmland covers.
Yeah.
He has some of the original Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein pages, and he had some of the original Stephen Gammell pages from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and I saw them.
See, I've looked forever. I can't find any of them.
It's because Guillermo del Toro owns them all. Yeah, he bought all of them.
Is he selling?
You wish.
Now that I know, look at me. I have that look.
Oh,
I will do it.
Oh, no, it's a mad attack.
I will get one piece. Guillermo del Toro, I know you're listening. One piece. Let's negotiate.
Just, I guess, to add on to what you were just saying right now, like I don't know if you guys know this, but it's been shopped around that Guillermo del Toro is going to try to make a movie out of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
I have not.
Yeah.
I'd watch
like within, it's been talked about for probably about a year or two now, but it's one of like those like passion projects that he's been trying to get done.
Would anthology like?
That's the only way I can imagine doing it. Honestly, like that's how I wish, you know. And if he's a true fan,
if he could capture that look, the Stephen Gammell art look, I'd lose my mind. That'd be so scary.
Yeah, could you take it? Could you take a feature of Gammell esque world?
It'd be so freaky.
Oh, my God, yeah. And that's what I love about his movies already is that they're already very... The makeup is visceral, I feel like. It stays in your mind. Yeah. You know, when you see something that's in his world, you never forget it. And you know, it's like, that's Guillermo. You know, I feel like he's the guy who should take it on. If someone's going to do a Scary Stories movie, I'm okay with it being him.
Absolutely.
I agree.
I mean, he's one of my favorites, and I mean, I love that he's with the Shape of Water. He's doing a Creature from the Black Lagoon love story.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
I've actually just had an outburst the other day because someone had asked. We were at a toy convention, and someone asked me, "It's like, hey, how do you feel about the Mummy reboot? You know, because I was working for Famous Monsters. We had a booth, and like, how'd you feel about it? Did you like it? You know, Tom Cruise. And before they could fully finish." I was just like...
You headbutted them.
Like, how do you get... No. I was like, God damn it. Like, why won't they just give Guillermo del Toro the Dark Universe? If they just did that to begin with, we'd have an awesome franchise all over again. And then he comes out with The Shape of Water, and I was like, this is it. This is what I'm talking about.
I was so disappointed that we didn't... I don't care if you update it, but it should be gothic horror. It needs to be gothic horror.
Yeah.
It needs to be back to the roots horror. And they made it a Transformers movie with a mummy. And it was just, oh my God.
Did you see it, Rooms?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. How could I go see that?
I would be disappointed if you did.
George, did you see it?
Well, I had to watch it, yeah. We actually, I think our second podcast, we talked about The Mummy and our thoughts. We deconstructed it a bit.
Was it as bad as I think it might be?
Well, you know what? This is how I talked about it back then. I'll say it again. I was like, it's kind of like the Fantastic Four reboot that happened with Josh Trank. Like, if they didn't call it The Mummy, let's say they had called it Mission Impossible, semicolon Supernatural, you know, then it would have been, you know, an okay film. Because it's like, as a Tom Cruise vehicle, it was fun. It was exciting. It just wasn't The Mummy. That's the only thing. You know, it's like, once you title it a certain thing, you're expecting a certain thing. So, like, when you say The Fantastic Four, I want to see The Fantastic Four, not four random people with powers.
Yeah, no, you know? Right. Oh, man, that's tough. One of the funniest things that came out of that mummy, though, is they accidentally released a trailer that didn't have any music. It was only the sound effects, but not just the sound effects, only the efforts. So it's just Tom Cruise screaming. So it was just like the plane's crashing and all you hear is, oh, oh, oh. And it was just him screaming the whole
great Tom
Cruise. It was hysterical.
Was Mickey Mouse playing Tom Cruise as the guy?
Yeah, great Tom Cruise impression.
Oh, hiya.
I'll stop this mummy right away.
Oh, my God.
Pretty good. All right, guys. Well, that is it for the Famous Monsters podcast. George, do you have any business that we need to lay out?
If you guys aren't following already, follow us on Facebook at FMOFL. I always get that kind of jumbled. And on Twitter and Instagram at Just Famous Monsters. And, of course, you could always catch our FMTV on our YouTube page at Famous Monsters channel. And if you guys don't know this already, follow the freaking podcasters that are talking to you right now, the freaking Launchpad guys, because they're freaking hilarious.
Oh, hell yeah. Thank you, George. You can check us out at launchpadpod.com. You can hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at LaunchpadPod. Guys, this has been so much fun. George, thank you so much for letting us do this and letting us bring you on to your own podcast as a guest.
We've had such a blast playing, you know, on your guys' show. You gave us some topics that we're just having such a good time with. We got a couple topics we're going to throw your way soon, but this has been great. And really, it was a blast to have you on here with us because it was fun to talk with you guys and have a show with you.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. And to everybody out there, this has been Famous Monsters. Happy Halloween!
Children tied up by an open fire, an old Irish turnip glows, begging little kids in some messed up attire, like kids dressed up like hobos. Everybody knows a Shatner mask will start the show and make a creepy, scary night. Rigid boyfriend bods stab through the torso, magically maintain upright. Wait, there's more. They know that Michael's on his way. He's got a butcher knife that he will use to slay. And those in Haddonfield are gonna cry, 'cause the night he comes home, they're all gonna die. I wrote that while we were doing the episode.
That's amazing.
That's called the Halloween song.
Bing Crosby, eat your heart out.
Or George A. Romero, eat Bing Crosby's brain out.
If it goes out, it means the death of millions of people, everyone watching. Don't you understand that? Well, say it's a bomb, then. Say whatever you want. Say whatever you like. Just get it off the air. Please, you just... No, I can't...
gotta believe me, believe me. Take it off the air now, please. You've got to, it means this.
We have excused interruption. We're having technical problems. Please stand by.
It's still running. Stop it, please. For God's sake, please stop it. There's no more time. You've got to... Please, stop it. Stop it now. Turn it off. Turn it off. Stop it. 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 Stop it.